Hey everybody, welcome aboard The Shallows, the pod designed specifically for all you 10-team and smaller league managers out there. I'm your captain, Eric Henriksen, alongside chief mate, Carson Picard. Carson, how are the Seas faring today?
Seas are doing just fine. The Twins are just under 500. I really wish I could be at one of these games that has like 20 people there, but even for me, it's a little cold at the moment. Like some of these night games, and people always talk about like the Twins attendance and stuff, and I'm like, guys, it's 30 degrees out. The adage is like give until mid-April people actually do start coming to Twins games.
Hey, you know, if you were to go now, you could probably get a pretty good seat.
Oh, for sure.
But you know, just keep moving wherever you want to sit.
Freeze so close.
Yes, you could. Hey, nothing like freezing with a great view. On today's show, we've got the captain's report. We've got the return of From the Crew, and we've got a twist on a segment we've done before called Sink or Swim, which we really covered during draft season, but we've got a new twist on it that Carson put together for us, so it's really exciting and it's going to be really fun later on in the show. But before we officially leave port today, we release a new episode every Friday. The audio version releases at 11 a.m. Eastern, wherever you get your podcasts, and the video version premieres on YouTube the same night at 8 p.m. If you ever want to see our beautiful made-for-radio mug. So be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Leave us a 5-star rating, a like, a thumbs up, a kind review, and don't forget we are part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. So check out the other pods we have available. There are new episodes out daily, including the First Pitch Pod with Carson. That's right. Very exciting. So check out those other pods. And visit pitcherless.com for all the latest and greatest content published daily as well. Also from Carson, part 3 of the BABIP series.
BABIP part 3, it's out now.
Yeah, go check it out on the pitcherless.com website. And with that, we will be right back with the captain's report. So stay tuned. Welcome back to The Shallows. This is the captain's report. We're going to touch on injuries first. Hunter Brown, strained shoulder, 15-day IL. I heard this morning it is an 8 to 12-week timeline. He actually received an A health grade before the season, so this is wildly unexpected.
Pitchers, man. Pitchers. This sucks so much. This sucks so much for a guy whose fastball velocity is really paramount to their game. Shoulder surgeries are just the scary ones, so you hope it's something they're going to be able to recover from. They're young, and this healing process hopefully will be just fine. But, man, this sucks so bad for a guy that was in the positioning to make a run at being a bona fide ace in baseball.
He, I bet, comes back after the All-Star break, although this is the Astros, so I don't know how much you can really trust them on injury reporting.
Yeah.
Moving to the other side of the border, north, to the Blue Jays, Alejandro Kirk, thumb surgery, 10-day IL. He's out for over a month. I think you can safely cut bet on Alejandro Kirk. Catcher is a very deep position this season. Coming back over, we're going to be close to me here. In New York, Juan Soto, calf strain, 15-day IL. Calf strains are recently in basketball. I know that it's not baseball, but in basketball, calf strains have really had a spotlight shined on them because they often lead to Achilles tears in basketball. So this is really important that Juan Soto kind of take the time, heal, and get better, because you don't want him trying to steal second base and tearing that Achilles. That's an expensive Achilles.
I'm glad you brought up the steals, because that's something that was Soto's value. I mean, he was always going to be a top five pick, but the Soto's value really took a jump last year because of the steals. And this calf strain, if you remember, Mike Trout had a calf strain a few years ago that just kept nagging him. You know, you hope it's not anything nearly that serious, but I think you'd be really hesitant to say that Soto's going to steal 30 plus bags this year after this, especially.
Absolutely. You know, the most, not famous, but like the one that comes to the top of my mind real quick when it comes to calf strains is Josh Donaldson.
Oh, that's a good one.
He experienced the calf strain and literally couldn't shake it the rest of his career. I think it kind of just like that particular injury for some reason just derailed Josh Donaldson's career. Couldn't shake it for years. Unfortunate news here for Jordan Lawler, who was really looking interesting here in the early going. Yeah, he really was. He was finally getting playing time every day. Got hit, I believe, with a pitch on the hand. Turns out he fractured his wrist. Didn't initially show up on the x-rays. I thought, oh, he's going to be in the clear. He'll be out for a few days. Nope. He not only hit the IL, he is on the 60-day injured list. So he will be out for quite some time here. Who is that guy? Who is Kyron Paris 2.0 that came up that homered twice in his first two games?
Jose Fernandez. Yeah,
Jose, that's his name. I have no interest in Jose Fernandez, despite now seeming to have a guaranteed roster spot for at least 2 months as Jordan Lawler battles that fractured wrist. Mookie Betts, strained oblique, 10-day IL, said he's feeling light years ahead of schedule already, but, you know, like, he's a player. Don't they always feel better? Really,
I don't think Mookie Betts knows how fast the speed of light is. It's pretty dang quick. Pretty dang fast.
Very fast. That's why we can't go to other planets and stars, because they are very far away. Matthew Boyd, strained bicep, 15-day. This one I missed. When did this happen?
I missed it initially, and I was looking through the injury reports. I want to say, I can pull it up here to be super precise. This one happened, going down, like the same day as Cade Horton.
Oh, that's why. Okay. Horton went over.
Horton got removed from the start, and Boyd, I either it was in the news, I think I heard something about it, but yeah, strained bicep is officially diagnosis, 15-day IL. And that's, I think, all the news I have on it, but expected to miss a decent amount of time.
That's really tough, because I think Boyd was actually pitching very well to start the season. Biceps injuries, I feel like, are precursors to some other things that could be wrong, either in the shoulder or in the elbow. It's not typically just like a muscle issue. It's more of like a tendon joint something, and then it just like feeds into the bicep. So not great for Matthew Boyd. And then, as you alluded to, Carson, Cade Horton, strained forearm, actually going to have surgery on his UCL. He is done for this year and probably the beginning of next year as well.
That's popular crazy.
Breakout candidate. Yeah, I know. That's crazy. Terrible.
It's so weird. Forearm strain, too. Mm. I mean, usually you hear it's so annoying when you have a pitcher goes down with injuries and you see him kind of walk off the mound like that, and your first thought goes to the worst case scenario, and it feels like it just so often is it that escalated quickly. I mean, for getting on the 15-day IL immediately and then season ending surgery on it, I want to say the light that came out of nowhere to me.
I do remember reading that it's Craig Counsell is the manager of the Cubs.
Yes.
So Craig Counsell came out and said, yeah, he's going to miss time like immediately after the game.
Yeah.
But it's still not determined whether he's going to have full-blown Tommy John or if he's going to have the internal brace procedure. So if you're in like a dynasty or a keeper league, probably more keeper league rather than dynasty. I don't think you're cutting bait in dynasty, but in keeper leagues, like, you may be able to let him go, because he could probably, you know, if it's internal brace, he's going to miss some of April next year. And if it's full-blown Tommy John, you're not going to see him until the All-Star break.
Yep.
Unfortunate news for Cade Horton. That does it for the injuries. Now, I hope everyone saw this, because this was wild. I don't know if anybody knows, but there was a boxing match on the baseball field yesterday between the Angels and Braves. Braves, and I'm quoting Scott White on this, Braves, quote, legend, Jorge Soler, threw haymakers with Reynaldo Lopez yesterday. Absolutely insane. They were both suspended 7 games. And since then, Lopez appealed and his suspension has been reduced to 5, and with the Braves off day, he's actually not going to miss a start, which I freaking hate that for pitchers, right? Like, you're suspended, you're not going to pitch these games anyway.
Yeah,
you should actually have to miss a turn in the rotation. But what were your thoughts?
That's crazy. When, you know, I was talking about this recently, like, when's the last time, last week I was like, when's the last time someone said, when's the last time we had a bona fide mound charge? And it was like 3 days later, This happens. I'm like, I think this is the first since Harper Strickland. Like, I can't, like, Amir Garrett charged from the mound, but and there was the fight between Ramirez and the Tim Anderson, but that, like, a bona fide mound charge, it's been a while, and that I can think of, certainly. Maybe one of you can let me know if I missed one, but yeah, this just, there's just came out of nowhere. Like, all right, here we go.
I think Soler was hit in the first at bat, and then there was like an up and in ball four or up and in fastball. He did not like it. And now, when Carson says a bona fide mound charge, he's talking about the hitter charging the mound, not nonsense jawing as you're walking up the first baseline. No, from the batter's box to the pitcher.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think it was Bryce Harper, Hunter Strickland. I think that was the last bona fide.
That was
like throw the bat down, kick off the helmet, run full speed.
if you're in Harper's case, throw the helmet exactly 45 degrees from you. But it was, that's 9 years ago, which is crazy. But yeah, how about that?
Pretty wild. You know,
former teammates.
I know, former teammate. Yeah, well,
were they? Wait. Hold yes. I can look this up. I can look this up, actually. We, you know, here on The Shallows, we make claims and we do research to make sure the veracity of the claims is correct.
That's right. Jorge Soler. Let's see. He played for...
Okay, again, they technically Braves. Were. Yeah.
Braves legend, you know?
In 24, he rejoined the Braves, so yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's... That's
still, but yeah, it's crazy.
You know, you don't necessarily get along with every teammate. Okay. So maybe they didn't get along, but a little bit of entertainment news there for you within the baseball world. Soler, not really relevant yet in shallow leagues. He's gotten off to a decent enough start, but now he can't play for a week. And Reynaldo Lopez, I just think he's
kind of a spot start guy, if that.
Yeah.
Frankly,
yeah,
philosophy looked good, but
if you lost Cade Horton and you need a spot to stream until you find someone solid to fill that spot, Reynaldo Lopez might work, you know, for now. He's not missing a spot in the a start through the rotation. That does it for the captain's report. A bunch of injuries, unfortunate, to report, and one entertaining fight with haymakers that was honestly more thrilling than Tyson versus Paul. So when we come back, we are going to bring back from the crew, and we have a couple questions. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Shallows. This is From the Crew. We just have a couple questions here to respond to. First comes from friend of the show, Nels Jensen, has asked us a few questions this year, and we're happy to answer them. He said, through email, here's a classic dilemma in a shallow league. Garrett Mitchell looks like the real deal. Do you give up on Byron Buxton or Tyler Soderstrom? Now, I gave Nels a very quick answer via email, and I told him that the longer response would come via the show, and here it is. The short answer that I gave him via email was, no, you do not drop those guys. And not for Garrett Mitchell. So, Carson, why don't you give us the long answer why we do not do that?
Well, I'll give you two answers at different lengths. Here's the short version. Garrett Mitchell striking out 40% of the time. Woof. In Major League Baseball, it is so obscenely difficult to be productive 40% if you're striking out at that rate. You would have to kind of do what Garrett Mitchell's doing right now and just hit the ever-loving crap out of the baseball when you do. Right now, his BABIP is running 615. Folks, that is not going to be sustainable.
The BABIP guy.
This is simply not happening. Stuff at that degree is just not going to, it's impossible. It is not unlikely that Garrett Mitchell has a totally fine season and some of his strengths are exuded upon and he's able to clobber the baseball, which is kind of his big thing. But he has so much swing and miss in his game. And right now, that is just not, from a results standpoint, not being punished as much as it probably should be. Even if you're looking at the exit velo data and you're saying when he hits the ball, it's going far and it's doing well, and that makes sense. because you might just look at XWOBA and see that as thinking, okay, it looks pretty good. Do a little bit more research into that plate approach and just know the balls aren't going to find the grass and he's not going to be able to hit these spray line drives every at bat. And certainly, you know, he's a guy you might want to keep around for to see if he can make adjustments on later players, but certainly don't drop them for Buxton and Soderstrom, guys with a lot more, a lot higher floor, a lot more upside. And even just anecdotally, like Buxton hit, well, this isn't even anecdotally, Buxton hit two balls over 108 miles an hour yesterday. And yeah, sometimes in April, it just takes guys a little bit to get the gears turning. Julio Rodriguez is hitting like 160 or something ridiculous like that. I mean, are you going to drop Julio Rodriguez? Don't you know the heck you're not. So be patient.
Funny, fun fact about the Seattle Mariners, like top four in their lineup. I believe it was like Sunday or something. I noticed the top four hitters, the highest batting average was 138. So they're riding the struggle bus there in Seattle right now. Look, Garrett Mitchell has a career high of games played of 69. His highest in one season. His highest plate appearances were that year where he had 224 plate appearances. He had 8 home runs, 21 RBI, and 11 stolen bases. He still struck out 32% of the time. He has never had a professional season, no matter how few games he's played, where he has struck out less than 32% of the time. He's not very good, and he will not stay healthy. He's not relevant in shallow leagues. 14, 15, 16 team leagues with giant rosters, sure, he's worth a pickup. But here on the shallows, that's what we throw right back into the sea, because we really don't want anything to do with Garrett Mitchell here, especially for Tyler Soderstrom and Byron Buxton. Next question we have here is from Can of Corn on the Discord. It is a very long one, so please bear with me as I read through it. I have it in three parts here. The question is at the end, but there's a lot of context to it, so I appreciate the patience as I read through this. So here it is. In the first few weeks, I always find myself getting stuck on the last few roster spots in my 10-team head-to-head categories leagues. Those are my favorite kind of leagues, by the way. My instinct is usually to hold high upside pitchers and try to build surplus value, but that often means I miss hot bats because I'm reluctant to cut arms too soon. A current example, Connelly Early just had a mediocre outing, but Nick... meaning Nick Pollock here at Pitcher List, and a lot of analysts I trust still seem pretty into the talent. The problem is that I already have Harrison, Messick, Sheehan, and the back end of my staff. That's Kyle Harrison, Parker Messick, and Emmett Sheehan at the back end of my staff, and Ryan Weathers is on waivers. In a 10-teamer, I probably shouldn't try to hold all of them. I was going to drop Sheehan, but Nick Pollock said he's still holding and said to give it a couple more weeks. On the hitting side, McLean and Vientos, Matt McLean and Mark Vientos, are available. McLean hasn't really popped yet, but the shoulder is healthy. He's hitting high in the order, and the underlying signs are interesting. Vientos has had a nice early run that feels a little like 2024. But these would really be bench bats behind Michael Garcia, Brandon Lau, and JJ Weatherholt, so it's not like I'm desperate for them. So my question is, do you guys have a playbook for when to cut bait on these cusp players in shallow leagues? More broadly, in the first few weeks, how do you balance holding upside arms versus churning for production when the alternatives are more bench depth upgrades than true lineup needs? League context, 10-team head-to-head categories with OBP hits, quality starts, and I'm sorry, I do not know what HRA is, but... that is the question.
Is that home runs allowed?
It might be home runs allowed for pitchers.
It might be.
That's an interesting stat. I've never played with that one.
Interesting.
Yeah. Very long question, Carson. Just so I can catch my breath on that one.
I'll take the reins. So I think one of the things we were really hammering home in a shallow league in the early episodes when we're talking about draft season is that difference between going for floor and going for ceiling. And with your earlier picks, you're investing a lot of capital in them. You're looking for sustainability, and assuming there's no injuries, you're going to hold on to those guys for a long period of time. But we also talked about the late end roster turn that you can totally do. Picks, you know, 180, 190, 200. If you think truly that some of these players that you're taking around those places aren't getting off to a hot start, you want more production, you can make that switch. But let's look at Vientos and McLain as an example. Their bats behind Garcia, Lau, and Weatherholt. Lau is off to a really good start. He's had a bunch of success before. I'm actually quite in on him this year. Anyone that knows me knows I love Michael Garcia with every bit of my heart. And JJ Weatherholt, you know, looks solid. And I think you could pick up Vientos for that. But of course, who are you dropping? That's a different thing. And so when I'm looking at these early productions, let me just say one thing. The Garrett Mitchell types, the guys with a big swing and miss, but are producing on a rate basis despite the very obvious flaws. Joey Gallo had this with the Twins a few years ago, and not to use a Twins. Sorry,
he played for the Yankees too.
He played for the Yankees too. I remember in April, Gallo had a really hot start, and then he cooled off significantly. And I think by year's end, his WRC plus was like 101, but it was really lopsided month to month. And that's an example of guys with an obvious hole in their game that I don't think you can believe in. Now, there are some players that do have like pretty definite production. We're going to talk about one of them a bit later, but here's a bit of a spoiler. Jordan Walker is a guy that was probably not going in the top 200, looks really good out the gate, has a lot of tools we like, and there's definite improvement in some fields that were previously holding him back, right? That's distinct change. That's changing the outlook. He looks very different. All the data backs that up. It's different to look at a hot start versus a sustainably hot start. I think those are just two different concepts. So I think, Eric, what do you think is your guideline for like plate appearances where you think like, is it real or not? Because I think generally my sort of belief was like, if they're doing it at 100 plate appearances, I'm usually pretty like, I'm pretty comfortable with them overall.
Yeah, 100 plate appearances, I think, is a really safe number to go with. Now, we generally in shallow leagues have to take action before we get to that point, which is why we look at the sustainable number factors. What are they doing that is sustainable? Striking out 40% of the time like Garrett Mitchell is not sustainable.
It's
hitting the
ball. So hard to be good with that strikeout rate.
Like 30% is hard to be good with, and this is 10% higher than that. Like, that's just how awful 40% is. But hitting the ball hard consistently, hitting the ball, making a lot of contact, bat speed improvements, like these things are sustainable factors that you can look at really quickly and early to see if what you're seeing is legitimate or not. Now, Michael Garcia, Brandon Lau, and JJ Weatherholt were favorites of ours as we were going through the draft. And we said, Brandon Lau is your second base cutoff. Like, do not miss that.
Yeah.
And he's off to a great start. In a interesting situation in Pittsburgh. Now,
by the way, real quick, we didn't say Connor Griffin got brought up in the thing, and I'm just realizing that now. That came out. Our last episode came out on Friday, which is when he was called up, so we missed that. But Connor Griffin's up now. That's crazy.
Fun. Woo. 9 years, $140 million contract extension announced today because they were trying to circumvent some rules, even though everybody knew that they agreed to that before he was called up. That is nonsense. Pittsburgh, Ben Cherington, boo on you. Anyway, I digress.
Okay, Yankees fan.
I want owners to spend the money that they should be spending to the players that they should be spending them on and not just locking them up at heavily discounted rates, because I read somewhere that Connor Griffin would most likely, in those 3 years of free agency that they bought out in that 9-year contract, would likely make over $140 million in those 3 years alone.
Well, so, we'll see how he does.
Bothers me. Anyway, yes, let's see if he's good. He's going to be good. I can almost guarantee it. He's so talented. Anyway.
Going back on track.
Yes, I digress. Mikael Garcia, Brandon Lau, J.J. Weatherholt. First of all, J.J. Weatherholt is an amazing pick for an OBP league. He gets on base. Those you can pick up bench bats, right? Because at this time of year, it seems like players get more off days than they would later in the season. Weather is more of a factor generally in the spring than it is later on in the season. As far as rainouts go, I don't know why. Well, I guess it's, you know, weather patterns. But I'll say this. Bench bats, you're not going to start them over the guys that, you know, you drafted to start for your team. Unless one of the guys you drafted to start for your team is ice cold. So I'm less inclined to pick up a bench bat than I am a pitcher. Because a pitcher is a starter is going to start at least once a week. So I'm going to end up playing that player at least once a week. And I'm going to get stats that I need. I'm not necessarily going to pick up a hitter and start them like ever, honestly. Like that might just not happen, right? If I pick up a shortstop, I have, let's say, I don't know, Elly De La Cruz at short, but I picked up a hot, you know, shortstop pickup or whatever. If they constantly have a game the same day as Ellie, and I can't slide them into utility for whatever reason, that shortstop's never going to play. It's great as like an insurance policy, but I don't really see like Mark Vientos, I don't really see why you would pick him up, really. I mean, third base, great, but I don't think there's anything special there. McLean is more interesting. You haven't seen the results yet, but I'm not the biggest Matt McLean fan, so I don't want to be too contrarian on him, honestly, because I want to see the production. His expected batting average is still bad. He's still striking out a lot. So I don't care if he put on 15 pounds of muscle. I just don't. Like, show me the production, and I don't see the numbers yet to say, oh, he's different than he's been in the past, you know? So that's my theory is I would prefer to pick up the starters. Now going back to the example that he said, Carson, he said Connelly Early just had a mediocre start. A lot of analysts really like Connelly Early. And he already has some other like early season darlings in Kyle Harrison and Parker Messick. And then one in Emma Sheehan, who we talked about a lot last week as a potential drop candidate.
Yeah.
What are you doing in that regard? Are you picking up, like, Weathers is on waivers here in his example. How are you managing those types of early season arms, trying to see if they're real or not?
One of the things that we do have with pitchers is a lot of pitch data to just know if the raw stuff and the raw pitchability is there. And from that aspect, we can take it further. If you have a 98 mile an hour fastball, you know that is good, or at least that has the potential to be very good with a few slight adjustments and things like that. Overall, like the point you make about starters are going to have more impact, even the back end starts that you're streaming, because I think that's absolutely true on a weak lineup, or on a for a player that has more upside kind of inherently in their profile. I think that's definitely something where it can click into place a lot easier. I think we're seeing that this entire segment leads us into our next segment. So I'm going to keep bringing up guys, but like Taj Bradley is a really interesting example of a guy who probably is maybe not by now, but would be taken on the waivers in late or taken very late in shallow league formats. Probably, I think his ADP was over pick 200, certainly. And he's looking really good because of a couple adjustments, and he's looking great early season. Is it 100% believable? You know what? I'm not entirely sure. I'm leaning on the side of yes, but we have more data for a pitcher to trust their reliability versus a hitter. Hitters take a long time to kind of figure out or even what's the upside there, where a pitcher, even if Eury Pérez had a pretty bad start the other day in Yankee Stadium, but you know the fastball looks good, you know there's stuff there, and you have those straws to grasp onto. I think with pitchers, you just have more data overall to know what's good, what's questionable, and you can evaluate from there.
Yeah. And like I said, I am much more inclined to pick up the pitcher at this point. Higher chance of injuries. How many of the pitchers, how many players did we talk about in the captain's report are pitchers that are hurt already? And there's only more to come. And then there's more coming off injury that does
pretty serious injuries at that.
Yeah. You know, like I'm more inclined to go fishing for pitchers, not to throw a fishing and you know, term in there, but yeah, I'm gonna try it. I have to do it, man. This is the Shallows. I'm going to go try and reel in a big, you know, a catch.
Yeah, once you actually fish this year.
I will not. I will only go fishing for free agents. And I did get Taj Bradley in one of my leagues. I got Kyle Harrison in another one of my leagues. But then there are leagues where I don't go for these pitchers. And they're shallow. Like, why? Why wouldn't I do that? Because I still think that even though we have more data early for pitchers, it is still too early to judge them, especially some of the fringy ones. And I know that sounds contradictory, but I still think you got to give guys a little bit more time. You're giving them three starts. If they had a bad three-start stretch in June, you wouldn't really pay attention if they had been good for the 2 months before it. So I think you got to give guys a little time. Look at the indicators. If they're not awful, maybe they're still working it out. It's cold. Cam Schlittler, for example, had his worst start of the season last night. It was still a really good start, but it was cold. At Yankee Stadium yesterday. Really, really cold. It was like 45 or less at game time start.
Oh, no.
And his velocity, yeah, Minnesota over there. His velocity was down. His fastball velocity was down about 2 miles per hour because it was so cold. Like getting the grip on the ball, just being physically loose, trying to throw a fastball as hard as you can is hard when it's cold. And imagine trying to get like good grip on breaking pitches. Give guys time. Unless you see something that is glaringly wrong, there's an injury, or you see somebody on the wire that is just glaringly obvious to pick up as you know, someone who could potentially break out. What do you
think? I think to wrap this up, last thing I want to say is I think at this stage, you're kind of almost, you can almost think of this as like a 24th, 25th round draft pick where you're chasing some upside and now you have, you're chasing maximum upside. And I would say maybe unless there's a great streaming option, an opponent, don't necessarily take them and expect them to keep them the rest of the year. But if they're showing good signs, buy into them. And if it works out, that's fantastic. If not, you have no real inertia for them to keep on the roster anyway.
Perfect. Yep. You can just drop them and churn and burn, as they say. When we come back, we have our new twist on sink or swim that Carson put together for us. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to talk about some of the names that we talked about and sort of avoided talking about in this segment so that we could save them for the next one. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with Sink or Swim. Welcome back to The Shallows. That's Carson Picard. I am Eric Hendrickson. This is Sink or Swim. This is a modified version that Carson put together for us. So thank you, Carson, for doing that. We did this during draft season. So what we've done here is we've picked five pitchers and five hitters that have either been really hot or really not, really cold to start the year. And we're going to ask each other whether we believe in them or not. And I can't wait to get to some of these because these are fun. And I've got personal examples of either not picking them up or or dropping them or picking them up. So this is going to be really fun. Let's start with the hitters. First up, should we go one by one or you want to just go all five?
Yeah, let's go one by one here.
All right, here we go. First up in the hitters, we have shortstop, who you called kind of like the cutoff, basically. Like, do not go below this. Do not miss shortstop. And draft this guy, Trevor Story, up first. Two RBIs in three straight games. Otherwise, relatively slow start. Carson, what do you think about Trevor Story?
Man, Trevor Story, a couple years ago, I wrote that I didn't really believe in him much. And then he had a pretty good year last year, despite some like odd things around the hood. I thought, you know, good for him. I didn't believe in him that much. Audio listeners, I'm shaking my head very vigorously. No,
I'm surprised you can't hear it.
No. I don't like it. There is just not a lot of pop there. And good God, man, the strikeouts are so high and the chase rates are so high. And he has not walked this year.
Oh my God, what?
Yeah, he's not walked in 55 plate appearances.
That is so hard to do.
That's awesome. That's so funny. I don't know what's up with that. I just think this is someone where it's like, at this stage, I'm going to assume that it's not your primary shortstop. If you listen to the shows, it shouldn't be. It's not your primary shortstop, and it's probably going to be like a middle infielder thing you have. And I just think the ceiling for Story in that maximum production, the chances of him reaching that after this really sluggish start and what we've seen, I think are very low. I think you can go waiver hunting. I think you can buy some other players and get some production that's going to be fairly comparable to even what a 60th percentile Story outcome is going to be. I think I don't like it.
If you look at Trevor Story's Statcast from last season, you know how everyone was like losing their minds that Ben Rice literally should be like a Hall of Famer based on his Statcast page from last season? Well, Trevor Story literally has the opposite of that. And as good as he was last year, he was probably one of the luckiest hitters in baseball. And I'm just going to say, no, thank you. I am not interested whatsoever in Trevor Story. He should not be on your rosters if you're playing in a shallow league.
You don't, you know, something else, and I'm just going to say this right now. Sure. 55 plate appearances, zero steals.
That is something.
That's huge, because he had 31 last year, and it's like, that's the kind of thing, if you want to justify it, and we've talked about this before, steals are weird, man. Steals are weird.
They are weird. They come in bunches, but not having any?
Nope.
Already, like, man.
Hasn't been amazed that much, but
still. I'm out on Trevor Story. I've been out on Trevor Story for the last 4 years, and I'll keep it that way going forward. So next up, we have Yainier Diaz, which if you play in an OBP league, he shouldn't be on your roster because that man does not walk. Kind of like Trevor Story, but worse. What do you think about Yainier Diaz?
Oh man, I want to like Yainier Diaz so much because he was so good before and still playing in a pretty dang good lineup in Houston. This is now a few years in a row where he just hasn't had that top level production really come through. And I feel like we're looking for a bounce back that may just not happen. It's so weird to say that with such a young player, but he's struggling again. I think we've talked about this before. Catcher at that level, you know, there's really definite top end, and then there's just kind of this elongated middle section. And I think Yainier Diaz has just fallen off of that.
Would you pick up Carter Jensen and drop Yainier Diaz?
Yes, I think I would. I think I would.
Here's maybe a little bit more of a stretch, because his playing time is dwindling. Like, just start him and let him figure it out. Would you drop Yainier Diaz for Samuel Basayo?
No, maybe. Maybe. I like the Pets beat so much. I talked about him before the season. I like him so much. I'll tell you, I would for Adley, who probably might not have been drafted, but Adley's looking pretty good coming back.
Number one catcher, Adley Rutschman.
Yeah, we've talked about him. Yeah. You know, he was, I think his ADP was like 280. So he, I don't know if he'd still be available by now, and maybe he is. If people are weird.
Yainier Diaz, Carson.
Yeah. Yainier Diaz, I don't really believe in it. The opportunity cost is just not there.
How about Liam Hicks, catcher eligible?
I picked him up. I picked him up. I did so in a really deep league because I needed, I actually am at first base, which is really funny, but I have Shea Langeliers and Kyle Raleigh in a dynasty league because I'm crazy. Oh. Like, I'm, I'm crazy like that.
Locked them up.
I got them late, by the way. Nice. That's fun. We'll talk about our leagues more as the season goes on. But Liam Hicks has, like, I need to do some more deep dives into him because it feels like a hot start that is not that doesn't raise a lot of red flags to me. Like, he's not striking out at all, which is crazy. So that to me indicates a change in approach, which changes how I evaluate things. That's something that, frankly, I'd need to look into. But yeah, Liam Hicks, I think you're buying someone hot, and I think if it crashes down to earth again, big deal. I don't think Diaz is getting there.
Yeah, really interesting numbers for Liam Hicks that I wish I could give you, but never mind. Baseball Savant did just finally wake up and change over here. 93rd percentile in XBA, 89th percentile in XWOBA, average exit velocity of 90.5. You'd like to see a little bit higher max exit velo, but he's got three barrels already.
It's a contact heavy approach that
it is,
but it's very, like, you see where those home runs are really pulling the ball. It's interesting.
The 9% strikeout rate is also, like, eye-popping, and literally the opposite of Garrett Mitchell. Next up, these are the good ones. Here we go. Jordan Walker. I have some shares. I picked him up, and all he's done since I picked him up is homer. Tell us why we both like Jordan Walker.
Jordan Walker swings the bat about as much, as hard as anyone in baseball. And for the last few years, he's just been unable to get the bat on the ball in a way that works. Folks, he's doing it. The swing and miss is down. The strikeouts are down. And as a result, he's not hitting like 200. It's simple as that. He's elevating. He's hitting line drives. And he's not striking out. And this is a crucial difference between someone that's hot and striking out a lot and the balls are just flying versus someone that is more productive on a per plate appearance level overall because of a change in approach and just a more refined approach generally. This is the Jordan Walker that was promised. He looks great.
Oh, he looks so good. Homered again today. That's three games in a row and four out of five. And we're not just talking about cheapies. I mean, this guy's demolishing baseballs. He has an average exit velocity of 97.5 coming into today. That is Judgian and Otanian, just to throw that out there. That is the kind of company he's keeping. He's already hit 115 miles an hour. I mean, you know that meme of Michael Scott in the office where he just comes out and he goes, "It's happening." That's how I feel about Jordan Walker. Okay. I am living that meme right now. If he, for some reason, is available in your league, go pick him up. I think you can't miss on this. It looks like it's legitimately happening. We've not seen a sustained period of success from Jordan Walker, but when we talk about underlying indicative numbers and information that says something is real, this is what we're talking about. Jordan Walker exemplifies it from beginning to end. Seven barrels already. That goes before today when he homered. Like I said, he homered again. And here's another guy who is also just, oh, by the way, one problem with Jordan Walker was elevating the ball, 13%, 13 degree launch angle on so average. Nice. Just it's right. Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Another guy who's also maybe putting it together, maybe he's as promised, and that's Cam Smith. And I think he and Jordan Walker kind of go hand in hand right now in this weird way. Do you like Cam Smith?
I am going to be the person that I think is relatively pessimistic, although we still think you kind of have to roster him, if nothing else, just because I mean, it looks like he's stealing more early, which is going to be a big plus for anything. The bat speed, this is another one of those guys that has that underlying like anchor of value. I still have my hesitations about the plate approach overall. But I think this is someone that just you can't afford to be on the wire because of that upside we were talking about earlier. I kind of don't imagine he is on the wire in most leagues. But I don't think I believe in this production that he's having. I don't think he's a 900 OPS guy. I really don't. But I do think that there is a significant tick up from last year's production, and that he is probably someone that should be rostered even in a 10-teamer. An 8-teamer, which you rarely talk about even on this show, 8-teamer, I think that's honestly maybe a little take it or leave it for me.
Yeah. He would be, I think, in an 8-team, he'd be an injury replacement for me.
It's about where I'm at.
You know, yeah, because unlike Jordan Walker, where everything is just like lining up, every 2 + 2 = 4 with everything you look at with Jordan Walker, Cam Smith, on the other hand, not so much. And one of the big red flags to me with Cam Smith is, as I'm scrolling through his Fangraphs page here to try and get to his plate discipline, he's only making contact on 67% of his swings. He has a swinging strike rate of 15.5%. That's not great. That is Luis Robert level bad. Like bad Luis Robert. Okay.
His whiff rate is slightly higher than it was last year, Cam Smith's. So while I like a lot of the, I like what I'm seeing right now, I question, and it's great that he's barreling the ball, I question if this is a hot streak or not. And I'm kind of leaning towards it is.
Yeah. It, to me, it really does feel like a hot streak, but ride that wave if you can. Just to give everybody an idea, on Yahoo, and I realize depending on what platform you on, it, you know, it's different numbers. Cam Smith on Yahoo is 59% rostered, and Jordan Walker is 55%. So there's a good chance that they are both available in your shallow leagues. You have to have room for Walker. I'm sorry, find it. Would you drop? I have to. Let's just. I'll throw out a name that I threw out before. Would you drop Samuel Bisaio for Jordan Walker?
Oh,
different yes. positions, but
yes, yes.
Okay. Where I wish it, there was an easy way for me to ask you, you know, like, what is your cutoff? Like, who is your cutoff to not drop?
I'll say I think we have a thing where if you took a player in your first 10 rounds in a 10 team or those first 100 picks, you it's almost like absolutely do not, under only the most strenuous of circumstances. If it's July and they're still in like a 180, like, listen, man, you got to cut bait eventually. But I think I think those first 10 picks, those are just your guys. Yeah. And if I'm super bullish, I mean, I don't really think I'd be dropping any of my round 14 players anyway. But would I drop Jordan Walker for Trevor Story, who was taken around 130? Yeah, actually, I totally would.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I'm trying to pull up.
What about Bo Bichette?
No. Third base shortstop, dual eligibility, probably taken too early to drop, to be honest. I'm trying to
kind of round where I'm at. I'd have to think about it.
In an 8-teamer, would you do that? Because that's super shallow.
Yes.
Yes. Because yes. You can probably find, you know, the 15 homers that Bo Bichette is going to give you, you know. Let's see. I'm trying to go down the player list here to see who might be worth dropping. Would you drop? Well, here's a question. This is fun.
Jesus.
Would you pick up Connor Griffin or Jordan Walker?
Jordan Walker.
Woo!
Yeah, listen, I like Griffin a lot. He had a great first plate appearance, but it's been a little rocky since then. I think I believe in him a lot, but I believe in Jordan Walker more.
Alec Burleson, who's off to an unlucky slow start, or Jordan Walker?
Sure. I really think Walker has like an all-star season in him.
You're
going to be naming a lot of names on the fringes. I'm going to be saying Jordan Walker.
No, I just, you know, like those are some like later names that, you know, could be under consideration to drop for, quite honestly, the hottest hitter on the wire. We have one more here. Andy Páez. Oh, boy. This is another one where I don't know. Do you like Andy Páez?
Páez is really weird because, again, it's a guy who swings for the fences and has that. Well, he kind of. He doesn't really have as much swing and miss. I think I said that before in the pod, and that's what I think of him. But I'm thinking of Outman when I say that. He is a little more refined overall. obviously playing in a great lineup that's really producing to the surprise of probably very few. Yeah. I think Andy Páez is someone I don't buy into the, well, certainly not the production he is now. I don't even really buy into like the 382 ex-Woba kind of thing that you're seeing, that I'm seeing. And I don't think he's going to be that. I think what you, you might have a slightly better season than last year, which is still pretty dang good. So I think he should be rostered.
Man. Okay. So the tough thing for me with Páez is I'm not sure if he's actually this good. He's doing the things, right? Like we just talked about with Jordan Walker. He's doing the things you want to see. His pull air rate is really good. It's 24%. Just to give you an idea, Cam Smith's is 3%, which is 10% less than last year. That's not good. Another indication that what he's doing is unsuccessful. And Jordan Walker, that is the only red flag to me for what he's doing. It's also 3%, but he just hits the ball so freaking hard. It doesn't matter because you can get away with it if you do, i.e. James Wood. Anyway, back to Andy Páez. I don't think these 2 to 3 weeks, however long it's been, it's April 8th that we're recording this. I don't think that's going to change my perception of Andy Páez. I wasn't interested coming into the season, and I don't think I'm interested rest of season. He'll be fine.
See, now here's the thing. I think he looks like he's going to have a lot of playing time in this Dodgers lineup that's really producing at this stage in the season. Does that act as a tiebreaker to you? Just for the runs and RBI. I mean, he's going
to... It might have to. You know, he may have like peak Teoscar Hernandez in him as his best season.
Yes.
Which is pretty good. Don't get me wrong.
It's pretty dang good.
I know, but you know, there's just something about the shiny new toy. Okay. Give me the shiny new toy. Jordan Walker, although not the shiny new toy, is definitely shiny right now. And I know in all of my leagues, all of my shallow leagues, Andy Páez is rostered. So I can't really do anything about it per se. But yeah, you know, like of all the names on this list, he may end up being the most consistent all season just because he was the most drafted out of anybody that we've talked about as far as hitters go. So again, if we're not altering our perception of players too much at this point, then yeah, Páez is, he's fine, you know? But that does it for the hitters. Let's talk pitchers. First up, Jose Soriano. Do we have a new ace? What is going on here?
I love Jose Soriano, man. I love Jose Soriano. It is an overperformance, to be sure. He's playing on a, he's a ground ball pitcher that's playing for the Angels, who do not have a great defense, but I love Jose Soriano so much. He's changed his pitch mix a little bit. He used to be almost exclusively change up sinker. Now he's throwing a curveball a lot. I think he is really fun, and I think that the ground ball rate that he gets is so good that pretty much everything else about it, I mean, we're talking high floor guys, I think he really is up there. And he's got it seems like he's got some more upside now. So I kind of love Jose Soriano. He's had a higher whiff rate this year. He's been getting chases more with that curve. I like it. Good.
Again, a guy showing all the things you want to see. I am a little mad that I missed out on Jose Soriano. Now, that doesn't mean if he has one bad start that he won't be back on the wire, especially in shallow leagues. But you need a Cade Horton replacement. Here it is, plain and simple. Oh,
I think he's so good. And if he gets traded at the deadline, which is certainly possible for a team like the Angels, I mean, man, Jose Soriano to the Cubs. Please. I need it so bad.
You know what? Say that every week and it might happen.
I will manifest it.
Speak it into existence. Because I know you said that last week too. Jose Soriano is looking really nice. You touched on all the parts that I was going to touch on. Stuff plus numbers from last year, just about the same as this year. Location plus, although it has not leveled out because the sample size is still too small, looking better this year. And maybe that's also making a difference for him that he's able to spot his pitches just a little bit better. Next up, one of your guys, Taj Bradley, who I picked up in one of my leagues this morning. You want to take it back? Oh my goodness, there it is. He's got the Twins hat. I was
talking about the Minnesota Twins.
If you're not watching us on YouTube, I was like, Carson looked like he had lost something for a second, and all of a sudden the hat comes out. Amazing. Amazing.
We got the Twins hat. We're talking about the Minnesota Twins. Taj Bradley, man. Twins legend Taj Bradley. He is he's looking good to start the year. I mean, the fastball is really bizarre. It is getting zero whiffs. Its whiff rate is so obscenely low. It's like genuinely, Eric, I don't know if I've ever seen a fastball get this few whiffs. It's kind of ridiculous. I need to look up the whiff rate on this pitch because it is crazy to me for a pitch that has this much vertical movement. It has an 11% whiff rate for a pitch that is sitting at 97 even miles an hour and has an induced vertical break of 20.
That's obscenely high.
That's like one of the highest in baseball, certainly for that velocity. Induced vertical break has kind of an induced inverse relationship with velocity. But he has developed this split finger into a pitch that is super lethal. It sits like right at the bottom of the zone if you throw the fastball right kind of where he's locating it, sort of a little higher than center cut, which means he's not getting a lot of whiffs on the four seamer, but he's getting a ton of whiffs with the split finger. The cutter looks really good, kind of anecdotally. And, you know, he's someone that's going to regress. Certainly he's been allowing too much hard contact in order to do it, but Bradley has also been going really deep into starts, 100 pitches, 6 1/3, 7 innings. He has been getting, you know, used as a bit of a workhorse with Pablo Lopez out. He's going to have, you know, all the more length to work through. I think he looks great, man. I think he looks great.
He coming up in the minors was the 36th overall prospect. People kind of forget that he was a big prospect coming up. And we just haven't seen sustained success from Taj Bradley over the years. Now, his run in Tampa was obviously not great. I'm looking at his partial season in Minnesota last year, even worse. But he looks really good. He's made actionable change to what he's doing. And that's really what we're looking for when it comes to these players. Is there actionable change that these players have made, hitter or pitcher, that has led to better success? And so far for Taj Bradley, it's that splitter. It's a new pitch. Everyone was raving, oh, somebody's throwing a sweeper now, or somebody's throwing a changeup. Well, Taj Bradley's throwing a splitter that's just absolutely killing hitters. And there is a pitcher on the Yankees, Fernando Cruz. If you play in saves plus holds leagues, he's probably a name you're familiar with, who just throws the filthiest splitter in all of baseball. It's literally all he throws. He will throw like one fastball during an appearance. Otherwise, it's a splitter, and no one can hit it when it's on. That's how nasty a splitter is. And, you know, most pitchers who throw a splitter can run hot and cold, because if they lose that pitch, that's it. Now, I'm not too worried about his hard contact because he's getting so many whiffs on the splitter. And you can get away with hard contact if your whiff rate is high. And Taj Bradley's overall whiff, that is almost a tongue twister for me. Overall whiff rate is pretty good. He's got a swing strike percentage of 12.8% throughout his entire arsenal. The number I like to look at this early, not FIP, not XFIP, not XERA, Sierra. And his Sierra is in the mid twos, and that's really, really good. So if Taj Bradley is out there on the wire, go pick him up. I'm just looking up his roster rate on Yahoo. That is what I have easy access to. It is 57%.
Yeah.
Hunter Brown on the injured list. Pick up Taj Bradley. Cade Horton, pick up Taj Bradley. Jose Soriano, both names I think are very actionable for shallow leagues. Next up, Eduardo Rodriguez. Twins hat's got to come off. Yep, there it goes. Carson, what do we think? Do we believe in Eduardo Rodriguez?
I don't think so. And
I felt that sigh from New York, by the way.
I like Eduardo Rodriguez. I really do. I just don't really believe in a guy. I don't think that's made a ton of, I'm going to make sure I'm right, but I don't think there's really too many changes. He has an increased amount of changeup usage, but it's so early in the season. I don't think it's so dynamic. I don't expect that to continue. And I just don't really think that this is, there's a lot of actionable change here. There's not a velo spike. There's not really a new pitch that's added that's been considerably different. I think this is a guy that's gotten pretty fortunate in a few starts he's made. And this is one of the things where small samples, we're looking at what's under the hood. I don't think much has changed under the hood. I think it's just, you know, racing on a pretty good track so far. The ground ball race, great. If that can sustain, that's phenomenal. There's almost no whiffs. There's almost no Ks really in that arsenal. And there's not a lot of fastball velocity that makes me anticipate that there will be. He's not a guy that throws a lot of breaking pitches. I don't like it outside of starts where the Rockies are playing at Chase Field.
Perfect. That's perfect. Perfect analysis of Eduardo Rodriguez. The guy's been in the league for, I believe this is his 12th season. He's been relevant for three. Had an ERA over five the last two seasons. Not really interested at all. Not at a 6K per nine. Like in a shallow league, you need pitchers who are going to strike people out. Like you cannot invest in that.
Well, speaking of
Sandy. Sandy Alcantara, next up on our list. Pitching deep into games. Volume matters when you don't strike out a lot of guys. Are we?
Eric!
Oh, boy.
He's back!
He's back!
Oh, my God, Sandy Alcantara, I love you so much. And I feel bad for even doubting you a little bit. But Sandy, oh, my gosh, he looks so good. He's doing the Sandy stuff. He's doing the Sandy stuff.
And the thing about Sandy that's so amazing is the volume is not the kind of he throws a lot of innings, but it's something I want to talk about a bit. Like Dylan Cease throws a lot of pitches and doesn't get a lot of innings out of it. Sandy Alcantara is the complete other side of the spectrum. He will have seven pitch innings and he will just throw pitches that get ground ball outs and they work. And he's the king of soft contacts. Sandy Alcantara looks legit and he's not going to be on the waiver. I know this. I wanted to talk about him anyway, saying get him. Trade for him. Make that moves. I'm so serious about this. If you can buy into it, first of all, even if you're in the wins league, the Marlins look pretty decent this year. So I don't think this is going to be one of those cases where Sandy just can't buy a win. But I think Sandy looks great. I really do. Everything that Sandy was phenomenal at in 2023, he is still doing now. The velocity looks great. The locations look great. Even last year, if you have reservations of last year, it looked like things were just off. And in his year coming back from injury, looked like things were just a little weird. This year, it's looking like he's totally locked in sync. And folks, we've got our ace again.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
If you're acquiring Sandy, if you're looking to acquire Sandy, I got a couple names I'm going to throw at you that you may have to trade away to acquire him. And I realize one-for-one pitcher trades are like really hard to pull off. They just are. Especially in shallow leagues. So, would you trade Kyle Bradish for Sandy Alcantara?
Yeah, honestly, yeah.
100%. Would you trade Kevin Gausman?
No. And the reason I'm not is because Gausman looks so good to start this year. And he's a 52% strikeout rate, by the way, in like two starts. And I don't think anyone has talked about that. But I'm going to be the first to say, what the heck?
He came back to earth a little bit last night, but he still looks really good. Like,
oh, I love
Kevin Gausman. It looks like vintage Gausman, to be honest.
Honestly, yes, I think you're right there. But here's I really can't do it.
I know
Kevin.
You love Sandy. I know. I'm going to make this harder on you. Nick Pavetta.
Yeah, I would.
All right, I
would.
Gonna keep going up the list here.
I really would. Oh, this is
Joe Ryan.
So that's mean. Do I have it? No. Yeah, I think so.
I think I would. I think I would.
Okay. I'm going to make it harder.
Oh, God. He's going higher.
Cole Reagans.
No! He just got hurt. He just got hurt. Pick someone else.
Okay. Well, shocker. Okay.
It was off a Jose Ramirez line drive to his hand. It wasn't.
Oh, that's unfair.
Yeah.
That's like a Chris Sale type injury. All right, I'm going to throw three names and then you tell me. Logan Webb, Freddie Peralta, Tyler Glasnow. Would you trade any one of those three for Sandy?
I would trade Tyler Glasnow.
I would too, because you know he's going to get hurt. It's only a matter of time.
Webb and Peralta, I can't do it. But we're talking about him at that level. I think absolutely he's so back, and I love him so much.
Awesome. Moving on, next up, and the last name on our list here, and I'll just give you my opinion up front. You say Kikuchi, just leave him on the wire. There are better options. Carson, are you interested?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yes, I am. Okay. I am interested. I like Yusui Kikuchi is a pretty dang underrated pitcher overall. He's got a lot. He's got great command, and he's got a pretty decent stuff overall. Nothing really I'm looking at is ringing a ton of alarm bells. The strikeouts and walks are both better than average, if slightly, but still totally fine. I think you're looking at velocity, 95 mile an hour fastball. Nice for Kikuchi, who's a guy that isn't one of those power pitchers. It's even slightly up from last year. I think nothing in the arsenal has really changed. I think this is one of those guys where I like against weaker opponents. Don't start him against maybe the Astros or something like that. But I think overall, Kikuchi, yeah, I think he's had a rough go of it to start. And I think he's a veteran that can figure it out.
Actually, he's been a bit unlucky to start, honestly. BABIP of 400, right off the bat.
Now, yes, granted.
Bad Angels defense.
Yes.
Right.
But I think he's just over. He's honestly been the same pitcher for years. And I think that pitcher is someone that has a lot of good stuff going for him. And he's got some, he's a 4 ERA guy. And even in shallow leagues, there's room for that. He has some swing and miss in his game. I don't see any reason, if you were into Kikuchi even a little bit last year, I don't see any reason to drop him this year. He honestly looks better this year than last year.
Another indicator of bad luck, 61% left on base percentage.
That's gonna go up.
Yes, and his Sierra is like 3.77. So odds are he's going to perform better in the future than he has in the past. However, what's that? Three starts, 14 innings. I'm not buying Kikuchi. I think I would rather take a shot on the younger, higher upside arms. Kyle Harrison, we mentioned a bunch of them earlier. Jose Soriano, Taj Bradley. Who are some of the other names that we mentioned earlier? Parker Messick. Even Emmett Sheehan I'd keep around.
See, that's kind of the line to me where I think...
I do feel it's the line, though.
Some of these hot arms, but after that, I'm like, I'd rather have Kikuchi.
He's definitely a confounding player. I would personally worry if I'm trying to protect ratios. Like, I would not pick up Kikuchi. Just my take. We agree to disagree on Yusei Kikuchi. Man, we ran through a lot of players today. That was a lot of fun. But we're going to wrap it up right there, and we'll be back next Friday with a brand new episode. To make sure you never miss an episode, please subscribe. We're available wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have a question for us to answer right here on the pod, reach out to us on social media, leave a comment on YouTube, which we reply to just about every single comment. I think our success rate, our hit rate on that is like 95%+.
Even the mean ones.
We'll make a joke out of it and it's totally fine, but please try and be nice. We need more kindness in this world. You can hit us up here on the PL Discord if you are a PL Plus member or PL Pro member, or you can email us at theshallowspod@gmail.com. He's Carson Picard at Carson Picard on Blue Sky. I'm Eric Hinrichsen at Eric Hinn on Blue Sky and Twitter. That's Eric with a K. Reminding you that murky waters are fine if you know how to swim. And I think we talked about some murky names today, and we tried to help you swim through them. So we'll see you next time in the shallows.
Take care, y'all.